Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to The Session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley, and with me still on our summer tour, the Justin and Beardy Show. Beardy's here.
Hi, Justin. Yeah. I'm still here.
Yeah, and I'm sticking with our new name, the Justin and Beardy Show. We're changing the entire session, I think, to be called the Justin and Beard. Justin and the Beard.
Yeah. It's a new name every show.
It is, because I can never remember what I named it the last show. But I think it's Justin and the Beard.
That sounds right.
Was that the last one I did?
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah.
I think it'll make good t-shirts. I can picture them.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Today, we're actually doing our first live show of the tour. We're at Radiant Beer Company in Anaheim, California. And I'm really happy to be here. I've met Jonas before. Jonas is with us. Jonas Nomura is a co-founder and president. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming down.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And Andrew Bell, who's the co-founder also and director of brewing here.
Yeah.
First
Thanks
time
for coming
you.
Down. Yeah.
Yeah, happy to be here. I've had your beer before. And then also, not only that, you came recommended to Beardy. I had Beardy send me a list of places that we might go on this tour, and you guys were on the list on top of that. So
always nice to hear when we get recommended.
Yeah.
All the way up in Washington, people are talking about you.
Nice.
So, yeah.
That's where it was. Well, when you're the Great American Beer Festival Brewery of the Year, which I think you were in 21, is that right?
Yep. Our first year.
Your very first year as a brewery?
Yep.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
It certainly felt that way.
Yeah.
It was a nice surprise.
That's some overachieving.
My text to Andrew was literally, what the F just happened.
Right. All right, well, let's just talk about that. Let me do this really quick. Thanks to our sponsor, More Beer, who brings you this show and every show. They're the sponsor of The Session and the Justin and the Beard Show.
Wow, two sponsorships.
Yeah, in one
Are
show.
They billed for two? Because
no.
They should be now.
Yeah, so thanks to More Beer and all of our sponsors, but to More Beer for keeping us going all of these years. Winning on your first year as a brewery is pretty much unheard of.
It was a nice little surprise. Both of us have been in the industry for a while, and I know I have several times. I think you have as well, been up on stage to get a GABF medal. So I went in the competition. We had tasted our beers right before leaving for it and felt hopeful, you know, to get maybe a bronze or a silver or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then we got announced for gold and go up on stage, and they start reading like a sponsor message, and they're sort of like pretending like they can't find like the list.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it flashes on the screen like Brewery of the Year, and they like push me up on the stage. It was
amazing.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't like see that coming, because I would have just been shaking like the entire time.
Yeah.
It was pretty surreal, but
To get that, you have to have won multiple medals.
We only got one gold for our category. It was a bigger category.
Okay.
And I think we had another beer in medal round, but that doesn't really.
Yeah, no, it's just really it's just based on medal count.
Yeah, so if it's a tie, it's medal count, and they associate it also with gold gets a certain amount of points, silver and bronze, and then if there's a tie, which I believe there was,
okay,
it goes by the size of the category that you got gold in.
Okay, but you to get the points, you still have to get medals. So you got one gold, but you got other medals that year. Yeah,
no, we just got the one.
Just the one gold. Yeah. Oh, I see. But just so
it was the most important
so
gold.
Much.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It was a little bit of luck.
Hazy pale.
Okay. Got it. Which is it the one I had today that you have on tap now?
No, we rotate through them.
Got it.
But most of them are the same ballpark. For our hazy pails, usually we do like 2/3 Citra, 1/3 other hop.
Okay.
So the one you had on tap right now had an experimental hop in it. The one that won was Citra Strata.
Okay, got it.
So
that's a pretty good combo.
Yeah,
you're stacking the deck in your favor there.
Yeah,
and there was a ton of entries in that category.
There were.
Was it like the second largest or something?
It was in the top five.
Yeah, because IPA of any both West Coast and hazy IPA are the top. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, American IPA and hazy, and then I'm trying to remember what was
that year. I don't recall. I mean, now actually the lager categories are some of the biggest ones, like which is ones. Surprising and, but awesome to see.
Yeah, and barrel aged stout oddly too. Yeah. But
so we've been joking on this tour, we're starting to change the name of the whole tour to the lager tour also.
Yeah,
every brewery we've been to, we're finding more lagers than we've ever seen, and of course brewers love lagers, so whenever we hang out with brewers, that's what we drink. But actually finding 3, 4, 5 lagers on almost everybody's menu.
And they're also fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I know there was a learning curve, but we made it.
Yeah.
And now you can have that many options, and they're awesome.
I would actually call it a learning mountain. because when I started the show in 2005, it was really unique to find a good craft lager, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think I've talked about this on the show before. So, I mean, every now and then you'd go to a craft brewery, and you drink one and you'd go, oh my God, they brewed a lager and they brewed it well. But it was pretty rare.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a harder style to brew, right?
For sure. I mean, I'm very happy that we keep a lot of lagers on. I don't know how many we have right at this moment, but last time I checked, it's five, right now, which
tends to be, usually it's like 3 or 4.
And we're packaging one tomorrow, so. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
5 is a lot, like even for nowadays. I'm happy to see it. There's no complaining here.
It's what happens when we come to town.
Yeah,
they put an extra one on.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Even though I only gave everybody like 1 week notice that we're coming to town, they brewed lager for us.
Yeah, you know,
that's that quick turn lager, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, not so much.
Just call it Brewing Network Lager. Brew it fast. Well, let's talk about the lager that's in our glass while we're at it. What are we drinking right now?
Yeah, it's a beer called Can Down by the River. It's a American lager with. It's like 20% rice in it. A little bit more bitter and a little bit more hop than you would expect from like a standard macro domestic lager, but trying to be, you know, crisp, clean, easy drinking. We rotate our beers constantly, and for the most part they're one-offs, but we brewed this, I believe, 2 other times before, if not 3.
This is at least the 3rd, maybe the 4th.
But a lot of our American lagers are very similar in this vein. Just light, crisp, you know, easy drinking.
But a little bit hoppy, like you said.
Yeah, a little bit hoppy. I feel like all of our lagers verge a little bit hoppier than would be traditional. But especially for American lager, I feel the issue for me with drinking a lot of the macro ones, which there's a ton of brewers out there who would be like, oh, yeah, my favorite beer is like, you know, PBR, MGD. I genuinely do not like drinking those because if they get a little bit warm, they don't have enough bitterness and they just come across flabby to me.
Yeah.
So I think the little bit of extra bitterness for sure helps in the drinkability. And then also, even if it's not like ice cold, and then also just having a little bit of hop aroma and flavor.
What are the hops in this?
This one, I believe, I need to double check, but I'm pretty sure that this one is Saws in here. It's either Saws or Saphir. The two American lagers that we do the most, one is Saws, one is Saphir. I think this one's Saws.
Oh, okay. But still a continental pop.
Yep.
Okay.
And nice. How is this filtered? You guys have a...
Biofine.
Just
Biofine? Biofine in 29 degrees Fahrenheit for a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah, that'll do
it. We get it really cold. Our glycol system can handle that, so...
Okay. We did inherit a filter, but we've never used it.
Yeah.
And don't... If anyone's looking for a DE filter...
a pretty big one if you're sub 10,000 barrels.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just don't find the need to do it, I guess, if you can chill your...
Nah, I mean...
It's so crystal clear.
Yeah, it's pretty bright.
Super light SRM, I guess, like it's supposed to be.
Yeah. As far as the malt bill on this, we do two different Pilsner malts. Part of it is a domestic CMC Pils. The other half is Vireman Extra Pale Premium Pils.
Okay.
We've tried it with just one or the other, and the blend actually comes together quite well, and then it's rice, which is very little color.
What percent is rice?
It's around 20.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you add rice hulls to balance that, or is your system handled
it? It handles it just fine. Okay. Yeah, and there's some acid malt in here too, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a can down by the river here, is what I think it's like, Beardy.
They should call it that.
Yeah, you just want to sit down by the river. This is a really nice one. And I love that you just hopped it up just a little bit.
Yeah.
I think you're right. They could just get so flabby.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of good American light lagers recently. Just like I'm saying, brewers have just gotten better at it, but they still could be a little flabby.
Yeah. The other fun thing about this is the can art and what we call it on the can, which is motivational lager.
Mm.
So can down by the river being the SNL reference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
What do you think the blending of country malt and Vireman does?
The CMC and... there go the lights.
Is CMC not country malt?
It's Canadian malting.
Oh, Canadian malting. Okay.
Yeah. So the CMC Pils is very, very neutral, but if you use it, when we did it just as, you know, all of the Pils malt, it came across a little bit flabbier than the Vireman Extra Pale, which is super, super lean.
Sure.
It's a very, very lean malt. I don't do it in all of our, like, German Pilsners, but I do, like, incorporating it into German Pils to even cut the regular German Pils. Like intensity a little bit.
All right, let's talk about how you guys got here. So if you won in 2021, you opened in 2020 or you opened in 21?
We started selling beer in 2021.
Yeah. 2021, okay.
Yeah, we sold the merchandise for the week of Christmas in 2020. But yeah, basically we found this space. I had previously been in a brewery and... basically, I live about a mile away, and so on my normal commute in, saw the release sign go up. I knew the brewery had gone out of business, and almost a year later, then saw the release sign go up and started making inquiries and figuring out, you know, what we could do.
And what were you doing at that time?
So I was working at Chapman Crafted Beer.
As
the director of operations.
It's a good brewery.
Yeah, absolutely. I love those guys. Still think they're making some awesome products. And
yeah.
But yeah, so then just started making some phone calls and figuring out what we could get going. And
how'd you link up with Andrew? What were you doing?
We used to work together. I came to start Radiant directly from the brewery, which I was there for just under 10 years.
Okay.
Jonas and I worked together at the brewery for many years. Yeah.
The B-R-U-E-R-Y brewery for business.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah. Although my listeners should know by now, because I do feel like something like half of the interviews I do have passed through the brewery at some point in their career. It's like a brewer factory over there.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It took a little break for a while after, obviously, Rare Barrel and Society.
Mm-hmm.
I guess King Harbor was the only other one in between.
Okay.
There's one in Washington. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys worked together there, got to know each other.
Yeah.
And then did you make the phone call like, hey, there's a building for lease, or you were already planning
this? We'd had conversations over the years a couple of times and just talking about, you know, what you would do if we ever were able to start a brewery up. And but nothing really super serious. I guess there'd been one other sort of call before that where there had been an opportunity potentially. But yeah, basically once this started coming into, you know, kind of, this is a reality that could happen, you know, reached out again and started talking and started planning out the brewery and working with another former coworker at the brewery to get things going with the marketing side of the business. And
okay.
We took over this space in September of 2020, and we, like I said, started selling some merchandise in December, and then we got our brewer's permit officially on New Year's Eve.
And the brew house was here?
It was turnkey?
I wouldn't say turnkey.
There was
a brew house here. There was a brew house here in some of the tanks, but there was a lot of work that needed to be done to get everything.
The first and most important thing that we did before we brewed anything was get an RO system in.
Oh, okay.
That's very important for this area.
The water's no good here?
Our incoming TDS is like 500.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. You can probably brew decent stouts without RO here, but...
I see.
Pretty much all the breweries that are making decent beer have RO systems.
So I don't have to ask why the previous brewery went out of business then. If there wasn't a...
It certainly didn't help them.
Spoiler alert.
That might have been one of the reasons.
Okay, yeah. So put in an RO system. So you had to drop, what, 40 grand right off the bat or something?
A little bit less than that. But it was still a pretty big investment. We also had to have a friend of ours who's a sanitary welder come out here and get into all the fermenters to polish out MIG welded in thermo wells.
I see. Okay.
So they didn't have temperature control either.
They did.
They turned on the air conditioner.
they didn't spec the tanks properly The tanks weren't designed properly, but MIG welded in thermo wells aren't sanitary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're just asking for bacteria to get up in there.
Sure. We had to redo the CO2 system, a lot of the water post-RO. We had to redo the steam condensate return.
Wow.
It was a decent amount of stuff we had to...
There was some homemade stuff in here, basically, that you had to go
through. That's a good way of putting it. They made some really good decisions, and they made some really bad decisions.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
but still cheaper than a new brew house, obviously.
Absolutely. Yes. Didn't have to do floor drains, electrical. Mm-hmm. There's more than enough electrical in the building.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the trade-off you make when you purchase a brewery that's gone out of business, is that you didn't design it, so it's not necessarily the way you wanted it,
but
you can also open much, much quicker. Like, we took over Keys in September, and we started selling in January.
Yeah, that's really fast.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Even with all the fixing and improvements of things.
So when you got the lease then, did you both immediately quit your other jobs and start working on this full time?
I gave the brewery a pretty long notice.
Okay.
My job over there was innovation manager, so I was doing all the R&D recipe development, doing raw material selection. So I helped, whether they used them or not, I helped write their pretty much all the recipe and blend plans for the whole next year before I left, and did a lot of stuff for line plan for them. They have most of what they were releasing at the time by SKUs, at least, was barrel age product. And they have a membership, so they need to know over a year in advance of what they're going to be releasing. So I didn't quit immediately, but put in a pretty long notice. And then my last day at the brewery was on a Friday, and Monday morning started here.
Okay.
Yeah. I made sure to set up Chapman with, the right people and give plenty of time. Again, we took over the building in September, but it had been a 8-month process before that.
Sure.
Everything. So.
Well, I guess that's what I'm getting at. It sounds like you still had to do a bunch of work here.
Yeah.
So fairly quickly you guys got in here and it was your full-time gig well before you were open. Even though you opened quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how big's your team now? Did you have a large team right off the bat? What are we looking at right now?
We're right around 18 employees.
Okay.
Obviously about half of that is tap room. Production side, Andrew can talk a little bit about.
Yeah, it's a pretty small team. It's myself and my two main guys are Billy and Jake. Billy being brewer, Jake does cellar, soon to be trained on brewing. And then we have two awesome guys who kind of do a little bit of everything as well. Derek and Scott, who do a lot of driving for us. They also help out on canning days. They help out with some general maintenance tasks. They wash kegs. They do a bunch of stuff for us.
Okay. You guys self-distribute?
Yes.
We do.
Completely?
I went from Southern California. We're in San Diego today. We do that about once a month or so. And then we do Orange County, LA, and then some of IE.
Okay.
Pretty much every week.
Got it. How much are you guys selling out of here versus other accounts?
Volume-wise, it's about 40% out of here and 60% out of distro.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really good. And I see you have cans. Like, everybody got to have cans.
Of course. 16-ounce cans. Try to keep the label art as interesting as possible.
Do you have a canning line?
We do.
Yeah? You opened with that?
Sort of. It was here the previous times we're running Michelada through it.
Okay.
So
on purpose?
Yeah, yes.
Oh. Yeah. If you would like a bucket of Michelada mix, we might still have some back there.
Yeah.
I'm it.
So,
yeah.
So yeah, we had to wait for it's an ABE canning line, and we had to wait for Tex to be able to come out, strip out all the soft parts. We added 2 fill heads as well, and a couple other upgrades. But
okay,
so our first like 6 beers.
I think it was
maybe 8.
I think it was the first 8 or 10 beers were
mobile cans.
Were mobile
through Boom Hut.
Okay.
Yep. Hey, there's Andres. One. There's one, yeah. Almost all.
Mostly through Boom Hut. That's a good point.
Wasn't, yeah. But yeah. Shout out to Boom Hut. Really good mobile canner in the sort of Southern California area.
So can I ask you, like, kind of the business side? You said the building was for lease, right? But all this stuff was in here, too.
Yep.
Did you have to purchase the business and sign a lease? Like, how does it work? Did the brewery just leave all their stuff behind?
No, not at all. No.
So it was a purchase,
it was dueling negotiations with different parties. And so, it was like renegotiating a lease with the landlord. And then to be very clear, we did not purchase the business. We purchased some assets from the business.
Yep, understood. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm saying that specifically because that's come up recently.
I see.
Some state agencies getting confused with that.
So weird. All right, got it. Purchased assets from the business.
That's what I'm saying. Like, sort of like, 8 months to a year of different things happening to make that all happen.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, besides just actually getting the business set, getting all, branding and, name set up and everything like that. Also just all those negotiations.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I will say we took over the keys to the space without having an actual name for the brewery.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Were there names floating around?
We had several
months worth of going back and forth.
With all the breweries there are these days, it's really hard to find a name that has not been taken and that you can get a trademark on.
And that you want.
And that you want.
So this is the stuff I'm fascinated with, like the marketing side and how you choose a good name. Is there like a boneyard of names that make it?
Oh yeah, there's a whole history.
All right, then let me do this. Let's take a quick break so we can get another beer in our glass because I want to talk more about beer. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, I want to hear some of the names that Radiant become. Like, I want the worst ones, the ones that you're embarrassed about. Like, I can't even believe I thought of this name. That's what I want to hear. You're listening to The Session. We're live from Radiant Beer Co. in Anaheim, California. Hang in there. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Session. Thank you for hanging out with us. We are still at Radiant Beer Company in Anaheim, California, doing our first live show of the Justin and the Beard tour. And it did just come up at the break, so I have to talk shit just for a second.
Oh, just a second.
Just a second, like 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
The Giants are in town this weekend playing the Dodgers, and I brought my Giants gear, mostly because I brought my whole house.
Sure.
That's because I live in what we're driving. I actually have a van down by the river.
So you have a jersey for me also then?
I've got jerseys for everybody.
Oh, okay.
And some of my high school friends are actually in the audience tonight. And I was kind of hoping. And they're still Dodgers fans.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you abandoned them at some point.
What happened was, I was never really a sports fan as a kid, as my friends can attest. I was more of how do you say a nerd?
A nerd.
Right.
Into radio.
Wait a minute. Into podcasting? Really? Yeah, I was like, yeah. Well, I'm definitely old, so there was no podcasting, but in my brain there was. Mm. And so I wasn't really a sports fan. So when I moved to the Bay Area, though, I became a sports fan, and then I became a Giants fan. So now I do have this rivalry with my friends, and I'm hoping that at least one of them is going to go to the game with me this weekend. I think I'm going to take the train back up and see the Giants play the Dodgers probably Saturday. But I don't want to get my ass kicked.
By your friends or by someone else?
By someone else.
Oh,
so
okay.
We have one friend who's probably the biggest Dodger fan of the group anyway, and he's quite large and intimidating looking. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping he's going to go, and then I can go to the Giants game. I wanted to go to an Angels game because I also on my list of things to do before I die in my early 60s, I want to hit every baseball park in the country. And believe it or not, even though I'm from Southern California, I've never been to the Angels Stadium.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes that way.
Yeah, but you're out of town.
Oh, they're away.
The yeah, whole time. Yeah. I was checking out. Maybe on the way back, though.
Oh.
What's going to be the freeway series next week?
Oh, that's right. The Dodgers are coming here.
Yeah. And we're actually doing a dual can release next Tuesday.
Really? Like one for each team?
Yeah. So we're doing Halos in the outfield and Azul in the infield.
Really?
We're going to be a family again, Justin.
You don't have to pick a side around here?
I mean, I was born and raised in L.A. County. Okay. I still live in L.A. County.
So you picked a side.
I'm not saying baseball is not really my sport. I'm a football basketball person. So
I think we have more staff here that are Dodgers fans than Angels fans, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
But
well, let's be honest, just since we're on the topic. I mean, once Ohtani leaves, nobody's an Angels fan anymore anyway, are they? Well, you do have one other guy.
You got Trout.
You have Trout. That's right. Okay. Yeah. And he's not leaving next year, too?
Yeah. I heard something on the radio.
Dustin, is Trout leaving next year?
I don't follow enough.
He's still okay. So you'll have like five fans left after the Giants sign Ohtani.
Just the Trout Farm.
Just the Trout Farm.
All right, what beer is in our glass before I really annoy all of our listeners?
Brighter than Sunshine.
Okay, and
it's
what is this?
German Pils.
Got it. All right, tell me about
at least our take on a German Pils, which was probably too hoppy if you asked a German. But
I don't know. Germans nowadays, they like their hops too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little Czech Pilsy on the hop side, right? Isn't it the Czech Pils that's supposed to be hoppier than the German? Do I have that backwards?
Theoretically, yeah, more hop flavor.
Okay.
And then
I think it's great.
More bitterness. This is sort of how I like to drink these sort of lagers, just with a decent amount of bitterness. And then this has a huge Whirlpool hop addition, like bigger than any of our IPAs.
Really?
Yeah, but it isn't dry hopped or anything like that, but it's...
Does that mean that you also do less, you do less at the 60-minute because you do more at the Whirlpool?
Yeah, so we do like a kettle full for bittering, and then there's a 10 in here. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, this beer has, for a 30-barrel turn, has 44 pounds of hops in it, almost all of that in the Whirlpool.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, 44 pounds of aroma hops. That doesn't include the bittering addition, which is probably an extra 5 or 6 pounds.
Okay.
Are you doing a full temperature Whirlpool addition, or are you doing a partial chill?
So just the way we're brewing, for German Pils, we do have a little bit of a water back in the Whirlpool, but we use hot liquor for that, so it's probably like 198 or something like that, 200 degrees. So
okay.
It's not, yeah.
Do you want to talk about our brew house tank size and the geometry that it takes to get full?
It's an interesting. So we have a 30-barrel brew house, 3-vessel, combo mash lager, which is great. It can actually fit more malt and water more malt than my previous employer, the brewery's 40-hectoliter German brew house.
Wow.
The kettle's a little small for something that's advertised as 30. Like the max we can boil, and it's almost up to the door is like 32 barrels.
I see.
Which makes it really hard to knock out 30 barrels. And the Whirlpool is the same size, so transfer over. And for a lot of our beers, we water back like a barrel or two. Hot liquor for beers where we care about having a very precise bitterness level. And then cold liquor for beers where we want more aroma of flavor out of the hops and don't really care as much about the bitterness contribution for them. So like hazy IPA or something like that, we would use.
Let me wrap my head around this. Does that mean you're basically brewing more of a concentrate and adding water?
We'll brew like, say, a degree Play-Doh higher than target starting gravity. And then once we're in the Whirlpool, we'll add back, you know, a barrel or two of water, whatever we need.
Yeah, not true, like, high gravity.
Yeah, brain. No, it's...
But just enough so that you can actually do a Whirlpool because of the tank size.
The idea is to try and max out the Whirlpool volume to try and get over 30 barrels in the fermenter.
Got it.
Which most 30-barrel brew houses, you'd have, like, a 40-barrel, at least 40-barrel kettle.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a 27-barrel brew house, but it's marketed as a 30.
That's so funny. We just make it 27.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to be annoying.
I mean, conservatively, you could call it a 25, but
wow.
It's all relative to the gravity and the hops.
Yeah.
that you're yeah. brewing on the recipe. Like at Heretic, we would often knock out 33, 34 sometimes.
Yeah.
Even on the IPA and the hoppier beers, just even though it's a 30 barrel brew house yeah. nominally.
Oh, you know. Getting back to some oddities for our system and tank farm. We inherited, we kept eight fermenters from the previous brewery. Again, 30 barrel brew house. Four of the tanks we inherited were 30 barrels, and four of them were 15 barrel fermenters.
Interesting.
So.
Really, really a hodgepodge they left you.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah, and we've since added 3 30 barrel fermenters and swapped around bright tanks and stuff like that. But
so they probably were just acquiring what they were finding around or on discount. I mean, no, they couldn't have been a plan.
These were custom ordered and spec'd
You're
out.
Kidding.
And then the previous owner of this facility went to Hong Kong to actually look at the tanks, but the problem was he had no brewing background.
He just wanted to go to Hong Kong. I mean, yeah. who doesn't?
Yeah. Yeah.
He just make a business trip.
Just business write off.
I'll take one of those
yep.
and those one of those, like... and then I'll be over at the bar.
Yeah, they had 15, 30s, and 60s.
Okay.
But honestly, the 15s are great. Like,
yeah,
really,
15 is a great batch size to sell.
Like, we actually tend to like have those be harder to make decisions of what we're going to brew into than the 30s. Yeah, the 30s okay. is like sort of just IPA lager, like just keep it going.
Yeah, the 15s can be things that are more challenging to sell, but it's really fun to make.
Sure.
But,
or just more expensive.
Or just more expensive, yeah.
Okay.
How does your brew house handle doing half a batch?
It's pretty fine. Like, if it's a very, very low gravity beer, it's a little bit of a challenge. But actually, what I really love doing in them, and we'll get to this with the last beer, is brewing big stouts or barrels, just max out the mash, a 30 barrel mash tun, and knock out 15 barrel, well, 16 barrels into a 15 barrel fermenter.
Sure.
And not having to do double mashes or anything weird like that.
Isn't it
just break the rakes?
We break the rakes almost every time we do it. Yeah.
Just because it's so much volume in there?
The rakes are a little bit on the flimsier
not the
side.
Best design.
It's usually the opposite, right? That the kettle would be so much larger than the mash tun. Like, I've heard of people doing two mashes to do
boil,
the type of boil you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what we had to do at the brewery for...
Okay.
Yeah, it was a German brew house meant for, you know, 12-degree Plato lagers.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to brew Black Tuesday on it.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Would you... If you were specking out everything, would you also have gotten 15-barrel... fermenters with a 30 barrel brew house?
Probably would have gotten a smaller brew house, but if we were speccing everything, we would have probably gotten a 15 or a 20.
Yeah,
but
if I'm going to be honest, like for the style of brewery that we want to be with doing, you know, as much direct to consumer sales as we can, a 15, 20, especially opening up during COVID, would have been really a better decision, but this facility was available, everything worked out with the costs and everything, so it made sense, and we've been able to make it work really well.
We just deal with
our advantage.
Yep.
So,
yeah, no, it works. It's the same amount of effort to do a 15 as a 30, but
sure,
yeah, you get to do some more esoteric things in them. Or,
well, tell me more about the beer, about the pils.
Yeah, so German pils, split malt on this one with regular Weihrauchmann pils and then Weihrauchmann extra pale premium pils to, you know, cut it, make it a little bit leaner. It has it's Magnum for bittering, and then it's Mittelfrüh, Tet, and Saphir.
Oh, nice.
And like I said, it's a massive whirlpool. So generally our German pils, we're doing, you know, whatever we need to get to round, I think this beer's like target 35 IBU. But there's, for a 30 barrel batch, there's an 11 pound addition at 10 minute and then 33 pounds in the whirlpool.
Okay.
So over a pound per barrel.
Tastes like and, it.
Yeah.
I love it.
It works.
Super
it
also, crisp finish.
Yeah. It does. And but it also has the malt sweetness that it should have too.
Yeah. Right. And water wise, I'll give away whatever you guys want. It's a W3470 beer, 65 PPM sulfate, 35 PPM chloride.
Okay.
Target.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the, mash schedule?
It's single infusion. We do have steam on our mash tun, but we don't usually use it unless we're correcting things, like if we miss temperature. But it's a pretty lean mash temp. I think it's like 147 for this beer. It's 147 or 148 Fahrenheit.
Are you doing any pH adjustment?
Yeah.
Anywhere?
Yeah.
Yep. What are you doing for that?
We do phosphoric acid for all of ours. Okay. And the target for knockout for this is 5.05 to 5.15.
Okay. And you just do all the correction post-boil or in the
whirlpool? No, we do it in the mash tun. I personally like to aim a little bit lower than what people say you should in the books. Our target mash at like mash rest is 5.00 to 5.2.
Okay.
That's what we were doing at the brewery for our blonder beers since I started there. It was like a Tyler King thing. And I thought it works really well for Christmas. So we have a little bit lower mash pH than a lot of people look
for. And if it's 5 even at the beginning of mash, you're still at around 5 at knockout also?
So it'll go up with sparging and such like that, and then during the boil it lowers.
Right. But you end up at basically the same. Yep. Okay.
It's a great beer.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite I've had today so far.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Mm-hmm. All right, I promised and teased before the break that we might dive into the boneyard of broken names that Radiant did not become.
Those beer names or
This is the brewery name creation document.
Man, there's some, yep.
There are some really terrible ones.
I forgot.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here we go. Perfect. Credo, Zulu, Craftwell.
Wait, is this all one?
Oh, this is not one.
These are all different.
Oh, these are all, okay. Yeah, yeah. Oh, no.
Because Credo, Zulu, Craftwell is not that bad.
Yeah, it has a ring.
What's the one out there? Blind
juggler.
Blind juggler.
What name was that?
I'm not going to look at those. Mudita.
Lyric was one that we looked at.
Oh, I like Lyric.
There's like, so this is like the everything.
No, yeah. And that's what I wanted.
Many
this
iterations.
Is the brainstorm.
Future State.
Future State was one that we talked about a lot. We made a beer name
I like
out of that.
One.
Inherent Good also is another one that we then made a beer.
That's really good.
Out of that.
Chromatic.
We talked about a lot that had some trademark issues.
I can see how you sort of drifted from Chromatic to Radiant. They're attached.
That was on the
theme. That basically became the theme. You know, so obviously we're talking about this all during COVID, and even before that, like I just loved the idea of creating a brand that exuded positivity and, you know, good things. People want to associate with brands that make them feel good.
Yeah.
And you want to give them something that makes them feel good beyond the product itself. Obviously, we want to give them the best product we can, but we want them to also feel like we're creating a community. We want them to make them feel like the brand itself is something that they can relate to.
Sure.
And positivity and lights and all that and color and, yeah, like that all goes into most of the names that really made it to the second, third, fourth, fifth rounds. Radiant just worked out the best.
Who came up with Radiant? Who gets to pat themselves on the back for that? Jonas?
It's in the spreadsheet.
Good question.
I hope it's like your third cousin or something. You know?
That's going to take a minute. I might have to look at that.
Or your best customer.
Some guy at 7-Eleven.
It's like, hey man, get the Radiant out of here.
Right.
It's not positive at all.
Radiant to you too, pal.
Yeah.
Do you want to go into the whole
we can definitely go into it
about Radiant.
So again, like with all these things, it's like, you know, there's A, do we all like it, and then B, there's is it protectable and is it not already taken, obviously. Sure. And for Radiant, is it protectable was kind of a question mark, honestly. Okay. Because there's some other places that have tried doing it, and we ended up actually buying a trademark that was existing in the beer space in order to fully protect the brand.
From a friend of ours.
Yeah, good.
Was it the brewery name or a beer name?
It was a beer name.
For a beer that hadn't been brewed in about 6 years.
Okay, but it was trademarked.
The way that, so it was Radiant Summer Ale was the trademark. The way that trademarks work is you can't protect any part of the name that is like common or just generic.
Sure.
And so Summer Ale is generic, so that's not protected. Mm-hmm. So that this became Radiant.
That was the only part that was protected.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so we purchased that from a friend that had on the brewery and then changed it, and now we have that protection.
Got it.
Awesome. Yeah. And they hadn't brewed the beer in 6 years.
Yeah. Okay.
They do have the ability to continue to make that as a pilot batch because it does still have some special meaning.
It was their first beer that won a GABF medal, too.
Are we allowed? Mm-hmm. We're not allowed to say who we bought it from? Where are we?
I think they'd be okay with it.
Yeah. Nobody even listens to this show, guys.
Ninkasi.
1, 2, all right. 3, 4.
Oh, so
five.
Jamie let you buy it.
Yep. Yes.
Jamie's a good dude.
Jamie's a great guy.
Jamie's not going to sue you. Phone call. No. He might yell at you, but he's not going to sue you.
No.
He hasn't yelled at me before.
Yeah. Well, that's great that you guys were able to work that out.
Yeah.
It's also great that you did that amount of due diligence. As you know, not everybody does.
No.
And then not only do you get yourselves in trouble, but it's a pain in the ass for the other people, too, to have to protect something like that. And
we know about that, too.
It's happened quite a bit. It's happened quite a bit with the Hawk Grenade, with my logo itself. And then then I got partially sued. That was a 4-year battle.
Oh, wow.
That just got resolved.
Well, I'm glad it got resolved.
It got resolved enough. We talk about that off air. But I'm just glad that you guys did the due diligence. And because, as you know, now you certainly know. Yeah, it gets tricky fast. Yeah, and what you're allowed to protect is tricky. It's a whole, you really got to lawyer up. And I'm not a fan of that, of litigation. But there is, I do think that trademark law is something that's super important and needed.
It is.
By the way, go to thebeerlawcenter.com. Our friend John helps me out with mine and can help you out with yours. He doesn't do specifically trademark law, but he does beer law stuff. But trademark law is tricky, and I now know more about it than I ever thought I would.
Awesome.
Yeah. Which it's not a bad thing, I suppose.
Yeah. And we also have a funny story about that trademark with another brewery, and then not going into litigation, but working through to create a fun collaboration out of it instead. So
when it works out like that, it's great.
Yeah.
I had a German beer company that started using my logo, and I can't really protect it overseas.
Yes.
When I trademarked the Hop Grenade, I was asked, what countries do you want it in? And the problem is not the expense of trademarking it everywhere. It's the expense of defending it, right? So I said, fuck it. I'll just do it in the U.S.,
Yeah. Although it's not cheap to trademark it everywhere.
It's not, but it's way worse to protect it.
Sure.
So this company started using it on their, and it wasn't even their primary logo. It was just a little hop grenade that they started putting on the neck of their bottles, and they put it on some of their merch and stuff. And I let it go. My listeners who travel would send it to me all the time. Well, fast forward a couple of years, they contacted me and asked, like, hey, we're going to start distributing to the United States. We noticed that we have the same logo. And I quote, they were like, so in the spirit of craft beer, how about you just let us do that? And I was like, in the spirit of craft beer, how about you get your own fucking logo? And I didn't say it quite like that, but I did say, I did sort of.
You fucking it. Fuck.
I did say, Yeah, you nut. No.
I took a turn.
Straight for the jugular.
No, I just was like, oh, yeah, that's not really going to work. And in fact, now that we're talking, I think that since I've owned my trademark for 10 years before yours, that in the spirit of craft beer, you should stop using yours in Germany, too. And it went back and forth, and they ended up they stopped talking to me and never sent their beer to the United States, at least not with my logo on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it can get tricky, and especially when it becomes international.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
They said, hey, how about we let you broadcast in Germany if you let us sell beer here? And I was like, bro, I've been broadcasting in Germany since.
Yeah. Do you know how podcasting works?
It's interesting. A brewery protects the airwaves in Germany. That's unique. So.
It was a really strange interaction. But anyhow, like I said, I have learned a lot, so I'm thankful for that. But it gets tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys did your due diligence. And then what about the image? Did you you didn't have any trouble with? Because there's logos and there's words that have to be trademarked as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually just right now we only actually have the word mark. We haven't done the whole like image mark and everything. But yeah, we worked with a designer that we had worked with previously at the brewery actually to do the logo design with the little sunburst and the stylized text, and went through a couple of different iterations and just loved what he came up with, and I'm very happy with it.
It's great branding. I think you guys did a good job, and you keep the theme going throughout the brewery. You can see it from the outside, it carries on inside, so you can tell that you really thought it out.
Thank you.
We tried.
Yeah. Well, you did it. And I assume your customers have now sort of bought into the vibe that you're putting out there too, this positivity and the light. And
I sure hope so. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely what we're trying to sell to people. And I agree with you. Like, the community that we've built is definitely, they want to be part of that. They want to be here, and we want them to be here. So
excellent. All right, let's do this. Let's take another quick break so we can try some more beer when we come back. You're listening to The Session live from Radiant Beer Co. in Anaheim, California, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Session. Thank you so much for hanging out with us still. We are at Radiant Beer Company in Anaheim. We're talking baseball at the break more, of course.
Oh, we were?
Yeah, we. As in me and the cool people in the room, Beardy.
Oh.
And I learned some sad news that I wonder if my friends know.
Baseball sucks.
How dare you.
It's sad for some people.
I learned that the baseball team from the town where I grew up is no more. The High Desert Mavericks. The Mavericks, where I spent, you know, small chunks of my childhood smoking weed, have since gone belly up. And it's making me feel my age, because I was told even that, like, the stadium was in disarray when it went under. And I was like, it was brand new when we used to go. And so,
where is the High Desert Maverick Stadium?
So I grew up in Hesperia, California. Uh-huh. And the stadium was in Adelanto. Thank you, Dustin. Adelanto. Which was, I guess, a good 45-minute drive, so you got good and high on your way there.
Is that desert speak for Atlanta?
Yeah.
It's when you're high enough.
Man, I didn't know they were gone. So
I had a similar experience recently, actually, of traveling through my childhood home, and the mall that was, like, the mall that, you know, came... It was built brand new when I was in sixth grade or whatever, is now totally vacant, decrepit,
right.
Grass growing through.
Looks like a zombie.
Apparently they shot a really cool car video, like literally like leaping off the second story onto the first story in the mall. But yeah, kind of crazy.
And it feels weird, right? Because I remember that stadium as if it's brand new. Like, if I drove up to it right now, I would expect it to be shiny and new.
Yeah.
And instead it's dark and falling down.
Like, you can get out in the field.
Yeah. All right, what beer is in our glass now, Andrew?
Actually, I don't even remember.
It's a Wonder in the World.
Wonder in the World.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Wonder in the World. It's a West Coast IPA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sort of our take, at least, on West Coast. We've gotten away from it a little bit, but at least using it in marketing.
What do you mean?
We kind of do two different types of clear IPA. One that's like, we used to market more as West Coast, and one that we marketed just IPA, but modern in our...
Internally, we'd say modern IPA. Yeah. I've learned from a previous job that if you say modern IPA, people get just really confused.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah.
For a friend. I'm asking for a friend.
So for our West Coast, we go for like a little bit more bitter. And then for our modern IPAs, modern in air quotes, we do a lot less bitterness and then focus more on like tropical fruit flavors. Both are really highly attenuated.
But. So let's just call it what it is. You're looking for the flavors of a hazy, but a clear beer.
To be honest, in like IPA, I wouldn't say it's the flavor of a hazy. It might be the hop aroma and flavor of a hazy and bitterness level, but still really dry and attenuated.
Okay.
I think it's more generally where you've seen a lot of the West Coast in particular, but a lot of the newer breweries are, you know, crystal malt doesn't exist in IPA anymore. Let's just be honest with that.
Yeah. Like, it hasn't for a very long time.
And you're trying to get, a very dry, attenuated beer that ultimately is just a platform for hop aroma and flavor.
Sure. And to be honest, like, me personally, in drinking IPA, I love to have like intense saturated aroma flavor, but I don't necessarily need intense bitterness.
Okay. Yeah.
I've just enough to balance, and you don't need that much to balance when it's a super attenuated beer.
Yeah.
So for like more West Coast ones, we would aim for recipe calculated. It's like 60 IBU or something like that. And
okay,
it's probably higher, but
but by hops, by pounds per barrel, it's way above that. It's just your calculate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. For one, we target, you know, for the West Coast style, we target a little bit more bitter and then usually a little bit more like citrusy hop character. And then for our more modern ones, at least for a while, we were targeting low bitterness, still highly attenuated, like a lot of stone fruit, tropical fruit character. So
I love the term modern IPA.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it encompasses exactly what you're talking about.
I think a lot of times it's easy for brewers to come up with these terms that make sense to us.
Yeah.
Because we're so hyper involved in the industry and seeing all these little tweaks and iterations that are happening.
Right.
But then the consumer at broad, like, yeah, has no idea what you're talking about.
We did have one funny one where we actually put modern IPA on the can.
They thought it was a Modern Times collab.
Well, not quite. We did one of those.
Okay,
but no, we were internally. We had been calling them modern IPAs, and we were at a festival, and one of our sales guy at the time was like describing the beer as modern IPA, and people were like, "What is that?" And then he had to like explain what that was. And at the end of it, he's like, if one more person fucking asks me what a modern IPA is, I'm going to tell them that it has Bluetooth.
That's perfect.
And so we named a beer.
Bluetooth.
It has Bluetooth. Modern IPA.
I love it. Just for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He came up with a couple pretty good names.
Yeah, several good names.
With ABV creep and everything, I mean, it's basically a pale ale. Modern IPA.
Is a pale ale?
Yeah, I mean, strong pale, you know, at GABF is basically
a modern IPA.
Low IBU IPAs and high IBU pale ales.
Yeah. So we do regularly brew a competition strong pale ale, and it is actually different from this, though, I will say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. What hops are in this?
So this is Simcoe Forward, and then it's accentuated a little bit by... accented, I don't know, either one that you want to use, with a little bit of Citra and a little bit of Nelson.
I love that.
And that's, for us, you know, for a lot of brewers, sourcing hops and selecting them is pretty important.
Yep. So you go to selection yourself?
We go to selection. This, from 22 crop here, the only hops that we're not selecting a lot for are Euro hops.
Okay.
So all of our New Zealand hops and all of our domestic hops are selected.
Nice. I think I'm going to start to be able to tell which breweries get to select their own hops when I drink their hoppy beer.
Oh.
And I'm serious. And I'm doing that. And it's coming from the show. I'm being educated on the show. And it's that my favorite hoppy beer brewers, the ones that I really rave about, like I would rave about this beer. When I can pick out the hops I like, I'm just a big Nelson fan, like most hop nerds right now. Mm-hmm. I can pick it out of there. They almost always tell me, "Oh yeah, I selected. You know, I do hop selection."
So I used to not like Nelson hops.
So did I.
Yeah,
same. I was in the same boat until I started liking Diesel and Dank.
Well, but I don't like Diesel and Dank, and that's for me. Like, you can have good Diesel and Dank Nelson hops, or you can have the Nelson hops that are this beautiful white wine, gooseberry,
passion fruit. Yeah.
Yeah, yours are pretty gooseberry.
Yeah.
Yep.
But again, that's like, so Ghost Town Brewing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Now, like, the winningest brewery on earth in the current times.
Yeah, they do. We were waiting in line behind them last year to get your awards.
Yeah.
To go get a medal at GABF.
Nice.
And I was chatting with them, like, wait, this is like your, third, fourth one. I'm like, what was your production size this year? He's like, oh, just under 10. I'm like, you guys are about to get brewery of the year.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, right. That's fine.
Two
and a half minutes later.
Brewery of the year.
Brewery of the year.
Same thing.
Well, and I asked him, I said, what do you think the difference is? Because they've been doing this for a while. And Justin, the brewer, said one of the main differences he thinks was when they started selecting their own hops.
Yeah.
And then there's been a couple of other brewers who have said the same thing to me. And I really think, you know, you can... There just is a difference. And, you know, you can make great beer without selecting your own hops, obviously. So brewers out there, or young brewers and new brewers that you're not at that volume, fear not. Don't worry. You're going to make great beer. You can still purchase great hops. But when you know exactly what you want and you're able to go find it, it just seems to make all the difference.
Beer is an agricultural product.
Yeah.
This beer is water, hops, malt, yeast.
And consistency is something you can get when you pick your own lots that, and everything. That, the spot a, market, that's is a big, box to box.
Yeah, that's a big part of why we started out brewing, you know, constantly rotating beers was because we didn't have hop contracts because we took over the space in September.
Sure.
4 months wasn't enough for you to get those.
Yeah, yeah, so we ended up, so
we were very fortunate, though.
Yeah, we were very fortunate. I have some really good friends in the industry who make some really good hoppy beers.
That was the one benefit of opening during COVID is
that people
some people were a bit long on hops.
Got it. That makes sense.
Or at least were very generous to us.
Yeah,
But yeah, we got some pretty awesome lots of hops from a couple different friends.
This is a great beer. How many pounds per barrel of hops would you say this beer is?
This beer is right around 3.
Okay.
On dry hop.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it just is crystal clear, by the way, as all of your other beers. Again, with a 29-degree lager on this one?
No, for ales we do 32. But
32.
Yeah.
So you got 3 degrees higher.
Yeah.
Because why?
Ale.
Obviously. Yeah,
it's a warmer ferment, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It needs to be a slightly warmer lager.
But, so finings and a cold...
Yep.
Yeah.
Cold a little crash. Bit of time. I mean, we're not...
It's beautiful.
We're not completely turning and burning on... any of our tanks. We're not, we could have tighter turns if we needed to, but I mean, we schedule out usually like 25 to 28 days for IPA total tank residency. So
that's on the longer side these days.
It is. We could cut it down.
We probably need to start cutting it down a little bit here in the near future, but
that, at
the end of the day,
we're in a
meeting right now, Beardy. Andrew, we are talking about cutting that down.
Well, we just also added a new 30, so we'll be okay.
Nice.
But no, for us, though, that said, our biofining process, we hard crash to 32, and then the next day we biofine, and usually the next day or the day after, it's pretty clear.
Okay. And what about this incredibly long lasting foam head on the top of this beer? That is, I know that sounds silly to ask about, but it's kind of uncommon. I'm halfway through my glass for you folks at home, and I still have like a great white head on this IPA.
So I appreciate
secrets to that.
I appreciate you mentioning that. I wish that I was actually even more proud of this beer. It has extremely nice lacing, but I would like to have a little bit more head on it.
Mine's
it's heavy lacing.
Awesome.
But I say that only because we have a long draw system here, which is not my favorite thing in the world.
Instead, you mean when it pours instead of a short draw draft system?
When we opened up, because we opened up during the second lockdown, so we're just selling cans at the door.
Yeah.
When we were allowed to start opening up to any kind of on-premise sales, outdoor food required, yada yada, we were replacing the long draw lines, and so we were pouring off of the system right behind us here, which is a direct draw system.
Okay.
And our head retention was even better.
Yeah.
This was amazing.
I had a local brewer who owns a pretty well respected brewery around here like corner me during our friends and family being like,
dude, how
so do you have to concoct all these? Like,
yeah. Yeah. So
what are you doing for this head? I'm like,
what is the trick?
Carving slowly, I think, is part of it.
Okay.
Not blowing it off. A lot of brewers, for whatever reason, like feed and bleed when they're carbonating and you're blowing off
aromatics
and also like foam retention properties.
So taking more time. So that's going to add a day or 2 days. What are we talking about?
Yeah, what's slow?
It's hours? Add like 6 hours.
6 hours. So we were at the show before this. We were at 14 Cannons in Westlake Village. Mm-hmm. Same thing. He had this incredible head retention on his beers, and I asked him the same question.
Yeah.
He also brought up how he carbonates it.
Carbonates,
inline for him.
Yeah, carbonates. So he's doing inline on transfers. Yeah.
So it's not an ingredient thing. You're not like adding some sort of carom foam. Like, there's nothing
No. Yeah. I try to avoid crystal malts.
Yeah, I know.
The only time we use carom foam in a hoppy beer is we use it like a bag in a hazy pail just to get it a little bit more body. But
okay. So it's not an ingredient thing. It's literally just how you carbonate it. How you treat the beer.
Well, I mean,
okay.
But you're saying maybe there is a slight. So this is 2-row malted wheat.
Okay.
But it's like in a, you know, 2,300 pound grist, it's like 220 pounds of wheat.
Okay.
But you're carving in 6 hours? I wouldn't call that slow, I guess.
Yeah, it depends. But I mean, we're just carving it up until it gets to the pressure and we're
You're saying 6 hours for the tank to get from zero to holding for the
exactly.
carb level?
We're just like slowly bumping it up, and we're not blowing off anything.
Sure.
There, so keeping everything carb closed and
just you end up with tiny bubbles.
Being gentle on transfers, like
So do you think that even filtering, which might not be the most gentle thing to do to a beer, would affect head retention?
Yes.
Potentially,
Okay.
And so, I don't want to add any more oxygen to our beer.
I'm certainly not suggesting
That's something that was a big investment that we did before opening, was we purchased a C-Box before we started.
What's the, I don't know.
DO and carbonation. It's with the piercer, it's nearly $30,000 piece of...
To measure your dissolved oxygen and...
Yeah, and carb level appropriately, not the shake weight method.
We had a Zom that we inherited here, which would have been fine. It was the DO aspect of things. It's like, I know I can make good beer off this brew house. I'm pretty sure I can make it good through tanks.
Yeah.
The canning line we inherited, I don't know.
That's what you're worried about.
Yeah, it's like, and we're going to be starting to sell beer during the pandemic, just in cans during a lockdown. Like, we need to know, this is not a canning line that I'm familiar with, and it has some design things that look a little strange to me. Like, I need to be able to verify what we're doing.
Right. And you don't want those cans going bad, like, in 3 days,
Correct. Yeah. Keeping oxygen low is very, very important.
Yeah.
Is there something inherent to a long draw system that reduces head retention? Like, is it just that in the line, there's potentially some foaming that is
also some transfers from different line sizes, too, that potentially could have some issues? And,
and over time, those lines are just... We do our best to clean them, but there's always going to be some amount of buildup or strip out from what that line looks like, and it's not going to be the same thing as just a short draw that you can
replace every
6 months.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a cleanliness just inherent to the system.
That's how I look at it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if we were building out Radiant, from the ground up, we would not have long draw. Mm-hmm. I think long draw, as a brewery, long draw is something I would avoid, especially if you're doing any sort of beer that has any sort of non-traditional beer ingredients. You can taint lines really easily, and when your long draw system is 60 feet underground.
Underground, even.
It's underground, so
this one is.
So,
okay.
Yes. Oh, as a bar owner, I wouldn't even look at a location that wasn't direct draw. It was. Yeah. I didn't have 100%. Too many standards. My standards are low in life and in business.
That's a hard and fast rule,
Direct draw only.
I'm very jealous of my friends who have direct draw systems. Some of our previous brewery colleagues have a brewery around here, and they're like, we have eight different pre-cut things
just ready to go
rip it out
cleaning canister wet here's a line Well, the beer is great. Dr. Charlie Bamforth himself would be proud of you. Dr. Bubbles, as he calls himself, would be proud of you. We've got time for one more beer. I think if we've got one,
it's
right
good. Yep.
We
it's do be very different
no break let's no. just get it go do we have it here
yeah
is
yeah.
it ready
want me to
here's gonna be a few yeah. production
Yeah. Let's do that, and I believe we're going to taste one of your barrel-aged stouts. So you guys do have a barrel program here.
I worked at the brewery for almost 10 years. I was responsible for the barrel program at one point there,
Got it. So you almost started with a barrel
program. Yeah, and the funny thing is we actually entered this beer at GABF this year, and that was a mistake. Or not GABF, World Beer Cup this year, and that was a mistake.
Why? Why a mistake?
So I'm a GABF and World Beer Cup judge.
Okay.
And I've judged experimental wood age, which is the category we put this in before. And
whoa,
a couple of years ago, a bronze that was modern pastry stout, modern barrel aged pastry stout. So I'm maybe times are changing.
I imagine that category has
you might see why, but we got. Well, taking a step back, Brewers Association has different guidelines for this upcoming GABF where they've added a pastry stout category.
So that it's different than the experimental.
Yeah, so that's a new category that's coming up. But we got knocked for
too much.
For being a modern vogue beer of being too sweet, too thick, not carbonated.
I see.
In the experimental category?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought experimental means experimental.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's all how you enter it.
But you've
it's,
judged it's a game. So yeah. You've seen that happen before.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like we've pretty much everything we've won any sort of any sort of like important award for, which have two GABF medals, Brewery of the Year. We won Alpha King last year. It's all meant for too, hobby beer.
So you got to round it out, is what you're feeling.
Yeah, but I mean, I like our beer. So yeah, this beer is called Germany by Way of Texas. It's the second time we've released this beer. It is. Mind grabbing a bottle when there's one available?
Mark, do you mind? Can I see the bottle?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Sweet.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. Germany by Way of Texas.
Yeah, so it's German chocolate cake inspired. So it's a beer that spent 2 years in bourbon. Well, no, bourbon and rye barrels. And I'm grabbing the bottle because I can't remember for this batch. The barrels for this one were Stag Jr. and Thomas H. Handy Sazerac, so both Buffalo Trace. Mm-hmm. The Thomas H. Handy Sazerac's part of the Buffalo Trace and Tea Collection. It's rye whiskey. So this beer was aged in those barrels. It was two physical barrels for a little bit over 2 years. And then we rack it out into Bright Tank onto ingredients and recirculate. And it has cacao nibs, Texas Hill Country pecans,
coconut,
and vanilla.
It tastes like a bit of German chocolate cake.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Instantly.
Yeah.
But
with enough alcohol heat to help punch through that for you, mm-hmm. right? So that it's not just German.
14%.
Yeah. Is it 14? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
The heat's needed.
At the beginning of the sip, it was definitely a concerning level of silkiness, sweetness,
mm-hmm.
to where I'm like, oh no, how is this going to finish?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it does. It's like,
it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Right,
that's the cake.
Yeah,
there you go.
For me, I get like a actual like sour cream cheese frosting character out of it, which is like crazy to actually get that character in the beer.
For me, just the sort of chocolate expression from the cacao that we did is really really nice, and it's kind of sitting out a little bit right now.
It's so silky to me. I'm not sure that I've had like that silky level of chocolate in a long time. Is it some special top secret cacao that you guys?
No, I just need to look up what we used for that one.
We get most Safeway. Have you heard of Safeway?
Hershey. It's out of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I mean, Safeway's kind of expensive. We'll usually do the bargain outlets.
There you go. Yeah.
Usually we get our nibs from Chocolate Alchemy. Actually,
yeah, they do a good job. My understanding, having worked with them for a while, is they're essentially the biggest supplier of green. Of non-processed,
like raw.
They basically supply most of the home chocolate makers in the U.S. with actual cacao beans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is fantastic.
Yeah,
and with zero. Whenever I've had a beer like this, how long has this been barrel aged?
Two years.
Yeah, I'm always waiting for that green pepper off flavor to raise its head. Like you get all the chocolate up front and then you're waiting for that shitty green pepper to come through.
To me, I get that more with coffee. You get that in chocolate.
It
can happen in chocolate.
It is not here.
It always eventually happens in coffee beers.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is just delicious.
They're just fighting against it with coffee beers.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you guys let it sit on the nibs and everything for a while, or because you mentioned
5 days. Five days cold though,
and that's after it's been in the barrel.
Yes,
you're doing all the flavoring after barrel aging. Okay,
yep.
So you go from barrel back to stainless to do that.
Barrel into Bright Tank.
Yeah, into Bright Tank
For this beer specifically, bagging ingredients and then just recirculating for a couple days to a week,
and then bottle.
Okay.
Where does carbonation happen?
In the Bright.
In the Bright, okay.
And we go low. We're so used to tasting beers out of barrels. I actually kind of like it. I think it contributes to the mouthfeel of it. If you go more carbonation, to me, it makes it sharp and it kind of doesn't really work with all the rest of the flavors.
I could see that. If this was any more carbonated, I don't think I'd like it as much. Yes. I don't always love them this low, but I think you're right about this beer.
Yeah, you should join the World Beer Cup.
Yeah? give me some better points. Was that when you got knocked on? Low carbonation.
Low carbonation. Yeah. Too sweet.
Right.
Yeah. So the nibs for this one were direct trade Ugandan, a very specific origin. Semuliki Forest.
Hmm. Wow.
I've been there.
These are great.
I haven't spent much time
in the RV. Yeah.
I feel like we stopped by there on our way down here.
We might have, actually. Yeah, this is delicious.
A lot of what it's kind of odd starting Radiant and being known for all these like fresh hoppy beers and lagers. I feel like industry wise, people, other brewers who I know me for stuff like this.
Right.
I get texts and calls on almost a daily basis about adjuncts, like, and by adjuncts I mean like cacao, much more extreme things like that. That has been a lot of my history is playing around with, because I was the innovation manager for the brewery, so
sure.
Dealing with all this stuff.
So did you toast the coconut for this yourself?
This was a blend of toasted and raw.
Okay.
And the toasted one we did toast at the brewery because they have a commercial toasting thing. The first time we tried to do toasted coconut, Jonas was convinced that he could do it in his home kitchen.
I did do it.
I looked at him skeptically.
I hated myself.
And I said, are you really sure about this?
How many barrels of this were you making at the time?
Oh, I mean, same thing. It's like a barrel worth. So
yeah, but we're doing like close to a pound per gallon.
Yeah, of
coconut. So.
It takes a while.
Yeah.
Especially in a home oven.
I'll be back tomorrow. Don't worry about it. I got this.
He's like, it'll only take like an hour or two.
It was probably six plus hours later. Yeah.
Yeah. So instead we visited our friends over at the brewery who have a, you know, full-size commercial oven.
Right.
And can do full sheet pans.
Yeah, you don't think about the fact that a half sheet pan really means it's half the volume.
Yeah.
You probably should think about that.
You should, but I wouldn't have either, Jonas.
Yeah, when you're doing like
but you're not in good company.
We're toasting like 125 pounds. No, maybe only 75 for your.
I forget. Yeah.
But yeah, 75 pounds enough of coconut.
If you need a hobby.
That's a lot when you try to spread that thin. It's a lot of coconut.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It got faster as I went on in terms of, like, I definitely learned the process.
You turned the broiler on.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So you kind of mentioned that you're not really known for these as Radiant. Do you foresee a future, though, where you maybe are?
Hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully. So we did do some non-barrel-aged stouts early on, and now we've kind of swapped over mostly to barrel-age, but it took us the better part of 16 months for the barrel-aged beer to kind of come into its own to where I was really like where I wanted it to be. So it was almost like,
again, making the style of really big, viscous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the most part, like first time we released barrel-aged beer was almost, you know, 18 months to almost 2 years into being around. So
as it should be, because it's got to age.
Yeah.
Right.
No,
but that was kind of the point with opening Radiant. And again, I mentioned over a number of years talking with Andrew about like what you'd want to do if you opened up a brewery. And we always would say like, we want to make the beers that we want to drink.
Sure.
Which is lagers and IPAs or hoppy beers at least.
I like drinking like this.
That size.
I like three to 4 ounces of this sort of beer. Like I actually really enjoy drinking 3 to 4 ounces and That's it.
Yeah. What I really enjoy is having a couple of sips of that and then having the IPA.
Yeah.
And it just makes those hops pop all that more. Like it's crazy how fruity.
I could do that all night, Jonas. Yeah. I just bounced back to the Pilsner and I'm really enjoying that also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 This stout can just hang out. I like these intense flavors and also the culinary side of things, like trying to figure out how you create something in small doses.
Sure.
Are these available still for sale at the tasting room?
We have a few more bottles left. Yeah, the draft is all gone now. And then we'll be releasing our next barrel-aged beer next Friday.
Okay. And will you be entering the barrel-aged or the new pastry stout category in this year's JBF?
Probably not.
What?
I mean, we do have a tank that's open, and
I feel like I have
an idea to do something.
You might have a chance.
There's but, time.
Yeah. Well, we registration started on Tuesday, so
no, it's right now.
So the last couple of years, they've given you, like, initially, like, oh, you can enter 5 beers, and then usually they...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Expand that later on to like 7.
I've seen that. Yeah.
So we have 5 beers on the schedule right now for JBF, none of which are stouts.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just giving you a little encouragement. I think it's delicious.
There's a thought in the back of my head of doing something either for JBF this year or World Beer Cup that would be
next year. Yeah.
Maybe a stainless pastry stout.
Were you guys at World Beer Cup this year?
Yeah.
Like physically? Yeah.
Yeah.
Andrew and Billy went out for CBC and he
judged. Yeah.
You know where it is next year, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Someone's going to die.
Yeah. That's the slogan.
Yeah. Someone's going to die.
Craft Brewers Conference 2024. Someone's going to die. Yeah. I think they could probably change it to Justin's going to die.
And maybe someone else.
Yeah. It's my favorite. It's my, like, I have a love-hate relationship with Vegas, like most people, I suppose.
There's some good food out there.
Yeah.
And at least 3 days in Vegas, that seems like half too long.
Right.
Like twice as long as you should be there.
And I usually go in early, and then I have to stay to the end to do the awards, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I definitely think I should not go in early.
So I have to judge, so I'm going to be there.
Oh, you're going to go early. All right, in solidarity for you, Andrew, I'm going to go early.
All right. Justin's definitely going to die
in Vegas.
Yeah, they go to Nashville, then Vegas. What's good?
How do you top that?
New Orleans?
Yes, I would love that. Tell me it's going to be New Orleans. That'd be great.
You need to start going to more places with like open container.
Exactly.
Just go Rio during Carnival.
Yeah. It's getting cold.
Do you volunteer for the experimental stout category or barrel aged category?
So when we're not entering, I love judging that category. Mm. Yeah.
I can imagine that there are definitely some highs to that category.
Yeah. Well, if you get to judge Metal Round, it's
incredible. Wow. Okay, sure.
I've judged experimental, and before there's Wood Age experimental, and I've judged Wood Age experimental for Metal Rounds, and I've had some of the most fantastic beers, like just mind blowing beers.
Oh, sure.
And usually some really really long discussions for awarding medals,
like
you'll have 12 beers, or it's usually 12 beers like presented in front of you, and we'll get it down to like the top 4 or 5 in like 10-15 minutes, and there'll be like another hour and a half multiple repours to either figure out
because you're not
judging ones
because they're probably so different, and you're judging them against themselves. It's like debate team all over again.
Now you're speaking my language.
Judging experimental a few years ago judged as Metal Round. It was a pretty awesome judging group too, like some very big names, and the beers were so diverse. The one that ended up getting gold was I can't remember the name of the beer, but it was Firestone's Method Champenoise Sour, and it won like the week before they released it. And I'll take a step back for people who don't know judging process. The only way you know what beer you've judged is if it wins a medal.
Yeah. Right.
After. It's completely blind.
Sure.
So you find out, you only are able to find out like who got gold, silver, bronze.
Yeah.
The beer that got silver was like a Pinot Noir co-ferment from, I think, Ale Song or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the beer that got bronze that year was the most incredible thing. Comes in the little cup. It says, you know, experimental. And then underneath it's because you add additional information.
If it's experimental.
Yeah. It says cream ale fermented with salsa.
Okay.
What?
So
crystal clear yellow beer. Good head retention, surprisingly.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Take it up to your nose. Smells like completely like pico de gallo with a corn tortilla chip.
Wow.
Like tomatoes, onions, cilantro.
All there.
Hmm.
Pepper, like chili pepper,
and
like corn. Mind blowing.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was actually a pretty big debate at the table whether it should not be an experimental because it had chilies in it. Like it was a chili beer because any beer with chilies needs to be a chili beer.
That's the debate.
but yeah, it was the entire salsa.
There's some small brewery in Colorado, and they had also won an experimental before with a cream ale with beets.
Okay.
And I like trolled their Instagram and was like, saw them juicing beets. I have no idea how they made that beer.
Yeah.
How they made the salsa beer, but
they did, and they won a medal.
Yeah. It was
so that would be fun.
Yeah, so a pretty crazy diverse lineup.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. It sounds like fun.
Wood Age Experimental or some pretty cool beers.
Yeah.
Judging metal around the
It sounds way. Difficult, but super fun. At least interesting.
I love judging catch-all categories.
Okay.
Because it stops being so much about the style, and it's more about hedonistic.
Okay. Yeah.
To an extent.
Yeah.
Especially once you get to metal.
To the metal table, yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to nitpick style as much.
That makes sense.
And you get a much more diverse series of beers.
Yeah.
Like judging metal
and the better ones.
Yeah, and the better ones.
Right.
Judging metal round for like Hellas is difficult.
Oh yeah, I bet. See, I would think that that's more of a debate, even because they're just so close.
Yeah, once you get to metal round, the beers are so freaking good.
Yeah,
and it's all like very strictly GABF and World Beer Cup judging is very strictly to style.
Okay, yeah.
So
and I've never judged at that level, but in the little bit of judging I've done in kind of local competitions and stuff, I need a bunch of tastes too, especially if it gets close. I can't, like, I have a very short memory. So I'm like, I need another taste. This isn't just the drinker in me. It's me trying to do a good job, right? So
this is Justin's judging glass.
Yeah. I'm like, well, a pint glass. Because every time somebody says, well, aren't you picking up this? I'm like, well, I need another taste. Let me see. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a terrible judge. I take a really long time because of that. I have to keep going back to it. So I can imagine when they get all close like that in a Hellas category or whatever.
Yeah, it's tricky. At least in Metal Round, you can get repours.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I usually advocate for once we get it to like the top four or five.
Sure. So. All right, gentlemen. Well, listen, that is about our time today. But this beer has been so fantastic.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, Andrew, you're doing good work here.
Thank you.
Jonas, thank you for having us and for all the good work you're doing here. I love the entire product that you guys have.
Thank you.
You've built a great brewery. I see a bright future, full of light and positivity. And I see more of those bottle conditioned barrel aged beers in your future too.
So.
I think.
Well,
I think
for light to exist, there must be dark.
There you go. Yep. I love this. Yeah, yep. That's the whole name of your program. I think it should be.
May the sun never set on your brewery.
For our barrel program. Yeah.
Yep. Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, another great stop for us, Beardy.
Yes.
You're doing pretty good over there.
Oh,
I think like as a co-host, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
You want to keep me around for another 7 years?
Well, at least another 3 shows we have.
Oh, okay.
Can I just suggest if you're going to go with the...
Justin and the
Justin
Beard.
Justin and Beard show, you need to get some like sound effects.
Ah.
Make it true like morning drive time.
Some morning zoom.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Justin and the Beard.
Yeah.
Air horn.
Traffic and weather on the nines.
Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah. That's
we need a slinky.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. We are having a good time on this road show. Our next show will be from Bagby, not a live show, but we're going to Bagby. I think it's also Bagby Beer Company.
Yes.
I always have to look that stuff up.
Yeah. So versus brewing.
Versus
brewery.
Yeah.
Yes. Hopefully there will be good beer there.
Yeah. Pretty sure we're going to have
a pretty decent chance.
You'll be in good hands.
Yeah.
Say hi to Jeff.
It's also going to be a very laid-back show. Jeff's a very laid-back person. So I'll be hanging out with him in Oceanside, and then after that, we'll do another live show with Modern Times and Modern Times / Maui. We're going to be interviewing the CEO of Kraft Ohana, it is now, which is now the parent company of Maui Brewing Company, Maui Distilling, Maui Seltzer, and Modern Times. Garrett's building himself an empire.
Okay.
And we're going to get the lowdown on that.
Couldn't be a nicer guy.
Yeah.
He's really great. And he's letting us just camp out at his warehouse, which is like we're going full old school can down by the river at Garrett's warehouse.
And basically. Apparently Blink-182 is playing across the street. So.
Yeah, his warehouse is across the street from the arena.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to listen to a Blink-182 show.
Yeah, the Modern Times like.
The barrel. Yeah,
okay, yeah that's really close.
Yeah, it's right there.
We Google mapped it, and it's like warehouse, bunch of other RVs parked on the street.
Yeah.
Ours will be behind the gate.
A bunch of new friends.
And girls.
That's what Beardy calls new friends. All right. Well, thank you for hanging out with us, listeners and folks who came out to see the show. Thank you to Radiant for hosting us. It's very cool to be here and get to talk with you guys. The beer is just so good. We're going to stay and have some more.
Awesome.
We'll see you next time here on the show. Thanks to all of our sponsors, 21st Amendment, More Beer, Beersmith Brewing Software. Go to beersmith.com and get your free 21-day trial of their brewing software. Williams Brewing Company, who's been with me since almost day one. Just a great little brewing company that you can get your ingredients sent right to your house. Thanks to all of our sponsors. And we'll see you next time here on Justin and the Beard.
Pew, pew, pew!
Take care of yourselves. And your beer.